Indeed, indeed. And up next, Stephen LaChance joins me. We're going to talk about some incredible work he's been doing in the paranormal field, a lot of it based here in St. Louis. That's very exciting because some of the places he has been to, I've been to. And so we'll be back with Stephen in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And I should say that a couple of his works, for the Uninvited and then Blessed Are the Wicked, they are terrifying stories. We'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. George Norrie with you. Let me tell you a little bit about Stephen LaChance, a paranormal pioneer. He has produced, starred, written for radio and film. Stephen is definitely responsible for some of the most high-profile paranormal cases of the last several years. Stephen was the first investigator to be allowed to investigate some of the locations from the very famed St. Louis Exorcist case. We'll talk about that story. And he is also one of the paranormal researchers for the very famous haunted Lemp Mansion, which is here in St. Louis, and one of the first researchers to investigate the fabulous Fox Theater in St. Louis. Stephen, I'm looking forward to this. Welcome to the program.
I'm really looking forward to it, too. Thank you for having me.
You know what? I did not know all these years that the Fox Theater had some kind of haunted background to it. Did not know that.
Right. I mean, it's something that they kept quiet for a number of years. What's funny is I worked at the Fox Theater in the early 1990s. I worked for the ticketing side of it. I was managing ticketing. And we were doing Phantom of the Opera. It was one of the first paranormal experiences I ever had, George. I came out into, and I was in the theater at night alone. I came out into the lobby, and I heard somebody walking and whistling up in the balcony area,
yeah,
where the offices used to be. And so I looked up there. There's nobody there. And I hear them there. I mean, they're there. So I call up to them. There's nobody there. So all of a sudden, all of the hair started standing up on my arms and stuff, and I'm like, man, I'm out of here. So I guess I'm leaving the theater that night. I can actually still hear the whistling and everything and the jangling of keys. I mean, somebody had, like, they had keys with them, you know. So the next day I came into work and I mentioned something, and they said, yeah, that's the ghost. We hear that all the time. You know, people talk about it all the time. Now, that was in 1993. So this year the Fox Theater asked myself and my group, the St. Louis Paranormal Research Society, to come in and do some research and put together a ghost tour for them. And so the first thing we did is we sat down is in the theater. I sat down and I turned on the ghost box and the whistling, the same whistling from 1993, the ghost box.
That's chilling. I've seen some great shows at the Fox, Stephen. I saw Sinatra there in the 80s. Just a beautiful theater, isn't it?
Oh, my gosh. It is such a magnificent place. And, you know, the thing is I worked in there for 3 years. And you kind of, you know, when you're in it every day, you kind of forget exactly how beautiful this place is. But going back into it, and it's just phenomenal. It's like stepping back in time. It's like one of those old movie palaces that are famous that you hear about, and this place is restored to a T. It's just really, really a cool place. And you got to think about the history when you step on the stage, like you talk about Sinatra, Chuck Berry. I mean, we could go through, you name it, probably has been on that stage.
Yeah, exactly. We'll come back and talk about the Fox Theater and some of the other goings on there. But
sure.
So when you got into all of this, what was it that kicked you into it? What happened?
Well, I I moved into a haunted house in May of 2001. I moved into a house in Union, Missouri, with my three kids. And I was a corporate trader at the time for Hallmark, as a matter of fact.
Yeah.
And I was just living a normal life, and we needed a house, so I went looking for this house, and I found this house to rent. And the house looked a lot like my grandmother's house when I was growing up, if you want to know. And so it was one of these places, you know, I wrote the check right away after looking at it and stuff. Upon moving into the house, though, I remember the day that we were unpacking the truck, the day of the move, and a car drove up, and they slowed down, and they rolled down their window, and they said, "We hope you get along well here." And I thought it was just my neighbors being nice.
They knew.
It's one of those things. I probably should have ran the other way. We went into the house. We moved in, and the kids almost immediately started having experiences. My youngest son, I set him inside for a garden hose one day, and I found him screaming in the middle of the kitchen. And I'm talking, you know, when I say screaming, I mean, he wasn't just screaming. I mean, this kid was white and shaking. And I said, what's going on? And he said, well, something chased me up the basement steps. And well, at that point, not being part of the paranormal or anything, you know, the first thought that went through my mind was, well, okay, this is the proverbial basement monster, so all kids are afraid of something. And I said to him, I said, well, you know, I tell you what, we'll go down there together and I'll show you there's nothing there. It's just your imagination. I mean, I was doing the thing that I thought parents were supposed to do, what my parents did, you know, right? And so he wouldn't go down, though.
He was reluctant. He was smart.
absolutely, George. I mean, he was, you know, he absolutely refused. So I did the dad thing where I went to the stairs and I marched down the stairs so he could hear me, you know. And, you know, and it was, you know, nothing here, nothing there. I don't see anything in this corner. And, you know, the truth of the matter was, is I didn't find anything that day.
See, but if this were a movie, Stephen, you'd go down the steps and not come back.
Right, right. Yeah. You know, that would be that moment, right? You know, and, you know, and I'm sure that's what he was expecting at the top of the steps. However, you know, when he was out of arm's reach from that moment on, I would find him screaming and saying these things were happening to him. My daughter was next. She was staying upstairs. I had the boys in the downstairs with me in my room because I was ordering some beds for them because they had grown out of their beds.
Yeah.
And, you know, so my daughter comes down and she's like, I can't sleep up there, Dad. And I'm like, well, why not? And she goes, there's boxes moving around. She goes, I swear I hear people talking. She goes, the closet door, I'll get up, I'll close it, I'll turn around and it'll be opened up again. So she, the next thing I know, I have all three of the kids in bed with me and I'm thinking, my God, what am I doing wrong? I thought, well, maybe it's the divorce, maybe it's this, maybe it's that. And I really couldn't figure it out. And I guess it was about a week later that I actually got my really good first experience with it. I was headed out of town to Indianapolis, as a matter of fact. And every time before I would go out of town, I would turn off the television. We would do that thing, you know, spend quality time together. And we were playing a game that night, and I was sitting in the living room. And they were in front of me getting the game board ready on the coffee table. And I could see in the family room, and I could see into the kitchen doorway. And when I looked up into the kitchen doorway, there was a black figure, smoky black figure of a man standing in the kitchen door. And I looked down real quick because I thought, well, you know, I'm not seeing this. You know, so I'm like, I'm going to look back up and it's going to be gone. And when I looked back up, it not only was still there, but it moved into the family room in front of me.
What did you learn about the house, Stephen? What about the history of the house?
The house is amazing. The history is... the house is actually built is part of where the slave quarters were for a Civil War captain. For those of you that like to look up history, look up Captain John T. Crow, Union, Missouri, and you'll find out this guy is actually pretty well established. He was started the 1st Missouri Militia in the Civil War. The house is where the slave quarters were. There's a belief that, and I believe this too, that one of the original walls in the foundation of the house is actually part of the slave quarters because there is a wall down there that is separate building material from anything else down there. And it also has where a window was at one point and a door that's now closed off. And if you know anything about voodoo, you know, in voodoo practices, a lot of times what they'll do is they always leave a wall in old structures when they build a new one so that would keep the spirits in place. Now, the Civil War captain's wife, what we found out through his family, by the way, the ancestors, is that his wife actually became pregnant with one of the slave servants' children. She had a baby. And he got angry when he found out that this baby obviously wasn't his and was one of the slaves. And he killed the baby by hanging it in a tree. He cut its throat. He hung it by its feet, by the way, in its christening gown to let everybody know not to mess with him. He went to his wife and he asked her who the slave was that she had had the affair with. She would not tell him, so he lined up all the male slaves and he shot them all. With her, what he did, obviously knowing that he couldn't leave her alive, he had the doctor... insert wires through her.
Well, and you would think that the one person who was involved with her would have fessed up so the other people wouldn't get killed.
Well, you know, that would be the man, wouldn't it? I mean, yeah, I would have thought that would have been the way things would go too, but obviously it didn't. You know, I don't know what they thought they were going to accomplish. I mean, they had to have known, in my mind, they had to have known that their death was imminent. I mean, you know, so why take everybody with them? But they did. So
this creature, this entity that you saw, who do you think it was, or what do you think
it was? I think it was the captain, by the way.
You do? Okay.
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, you know, a lot of what went on there, I think he's behind a lot of it. Because the house would scream, too, by the way.
Scream?
You scream. As a matter of fact, that night that I saw it for the first time, I got the kids up to leave, and it was the whole house. You had to put the key in the door to lock it. That was the first time it screamed. I put the key in the door and started to lock it, and this male scream came up from inside the house.
Jeez.
Tortured, kind of.
This sounds like that haunted house in American Horror Story.
This was before that.
Yeah,
but
way before that.
The kids, yeah, the kids heard the screaming, you know, the first time, too. Dogs in the neighborhood barking. What's funny about that, George, is that there was a neighbor that lived across the street that actually years later moved into a haunted house somewhere else and came to me for help.
Jeez, I'm getting the shivers just talking to you about this thing. How long did you stay there, Stephen?
We were there for a total of 3 months. Didn't take long. The last time the kids were in the house, it locked them in a bedroom and wouldn't let me get into them.
Unbelievable. And you say you rented it. You didn't buy it, right?
That's the interesting part of this. It was a rental. And not only was my family affected by this house, but you have years of history of numerous families that went through things with this place.
What a
I didn't know
what place.
I was. I didn't know. You know how, you know, I didn't know I was moving into the town haunted house. I was a kid from Washington, Missouri at that time. Union, Missouri is right next to Washington, but it's like light years apart. You know that, how that goes in Missouri.
How long did you live in Union? One of my old assistants, she has since passed. The Volas family, V-O-L-A-S, lived in Union, Missouri. They
Denny, that sounds very familiar because I lived there from 2001. To actually just this past
yeah May, they passed they both passed right around that period but they were with me since 79 and 1980 at my television station that I ran here in St. Louis for years. But it was Denny and Leanne Volas, V-O-L-A-S, great people, but they loved Union. They'd make that commute into downtown St. Louis every day. Mm-hmm. Is this house still there, Stephen?
This house is still standing. Now, the thing is we're not quite sure what's going on there. Obviously, I don't go around there too much. I hear inklings. I hear some people will tell me, well, the wife has said that there's things going on, the screaming's happening, there's things going on, and that she won't go into the basement of the house at all. The husband, on the other hand, now I've talked to him, and he told me that things were fairly quiet, but you know what? We had a lot of people working on this house. I mean, we had the Catholic Church was involved in this house. You had John Zaffis involved in this haunting.
Yeah.
You know, these kind of people. So maybe we did something right, you know, to cause this place for a family to live in it. But this is the family, the first family in a number of years that has been able to stay for any period of time.
Tell me what the Roman Catholic Church's involvement was with this house.
Well, what it did is it followed me, and then another family moved in, you know, years later. It was like in 2004. At that point, I guess it was the first person then. Johnny Zaffis obviously was the first person to call it a demon at that point, that it was a demonic. The Roman Catholic Church at that point stepped in. What they stepped in for was more to help us out because the woman that was living there was into the first beginning stages of possession. I was in the stages of oppression, almost to possession. So, I mean, when they came in, it was kind of just dire, dire straits. But the thing is the interesting thing is the church, and I thank the church for this a whole lot, is they did something very rare, George. They've actually issued a 156-page report on the Union, Missouri haunting, and where they classify it, talk about it, explain it, and then classify it as a demonic possession, oppression, infestation, and infestation, and invitation. It's a classic case is what it is.
That's unprecedented, isn't it?
It is unprecedented. Yes, sir. And I think part of the thing is I did some work for him. I mean, when we start getting into some of the exorcist, the St. Louis exorcist stuff, that was actually with someone that worked for the diocese that took me to those locations. I have the feeling that, you know, that maybe, you know, going to those locations in 2005, because it's when I went, that I might have made my own situation worse. And I think maybe they realized that. And that was part of their way of apologizing, because the first part of the report is a definite apology. They said that a lot of people let me down, and they hope that this makes up for it. So yeah, it's unprecedented, but I have to tell you, it was well received.
I would say that this has got to be one of the most violent cases I've ever heard of.
Mm-hmm. It is. I mean, when you start getting into the amount of things that were going on, with the kids, and then, you know, with us, and then it followed us in, you know, to our new house, and the nightmares. I mean, I would have the same nightmare 3 nights a week of walking down into the basement, and it'd be dark, and there'd be a candle, and I'd hear the shower, because there was a butcher shower in the basement. And I would hear the water running, and I would walk around the corner, and there would be a man standing in the shower washing blood off. Ugh. You know, that sort of thing. I mean, really. I mean, can you imagine, going through that 3 nights a week at least, you know, so it was affecting sleep. And then you have numerous pregnancies that people were involved with that would show up there, and they would end in miscarriages, horrible miscarriages. The effects that it had on the people that were trying to help. You had people bringing things home. You had people being thrown out of bed in the middle of the night. You had people being drug out of bed. You had shadow figures. You had financial problems, marital problems, all the things that go along with the demonic case. And it was happening not just to me, but it was happening to all of these people around us as well.
When you did move then, and it did follow you, how long did it stay?
It stayed until 2011.
2000. That's a pretty long time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it is. I went to. I had open heart surgery in 2011. And the week before the open heart surgery, we would walk into the kitchen, and we would find all the kitchen doors and cabinets open, and we would find all the butcher knives lined up in a row in the middle of the kitchen floor.
Unbelievable.
I thought I was, you know, and you mean, you, can you imagine getting the psychological thing that it did to you at that point? But I went during the surgery, obviously, I died. They said I was dead for a total of 38 seconds, which doesn't sound a lot to me and you. But when you're dead, that's a long time.
When you're dead, it's 38 seconds, let me tell you.
Here you go, brother.
You can't get that back either.
Yeah, you know, so. But the thing is after that experience and of the death experience, you know, it seemed that the attachment it's gone. I mean, it's almost like I had to die to get the monkey off my back. But
Stephen, hang with us. We're going to come back in a moment. I want to talk about the Limp Mansion and that case as well. Stephen has, again, a couple books out. One is called The Uninvited. It's about the story of this house he was just talking about. And Blessed Are the Wicked, which is a sequel to The Uninvited. And Stephen's website is linked up at coasttocoastam.com. It's Stephen LaChance, StephenALaChance.com. Make sure you got that A in there. We'll be back. Beyond Belief, that's our television program. And as we lead up to Pearl Harbor Day on Sunday, we're offering you a glimpse of our interview with Douglas Dietrich, who, by the way, will be my guest on Coast to Coast AM. But do take a look at what Douglas has to say and some of the amazing things. You watch it free for 10 days. Just go to beyondbelief.com, www.beyondbelief.com. Okay, welcome back to Coast, Stephen LaChance with us as we talk about the paranormal world. And in St. Louis, of course, it is well known that it has had incredible breweries, Anheuser-Busch, of course, being one of them over the years. But, Stephen, tell us about the Limp Mansion and the Limp Mansion family.
The Limp Mansion, the Limp Brewery, was actually one of the biggest brewery companies in the United States right before Prohibition. And actually, the brewery covered about 10 city blocks, by the way. In this same neighborhood, they built the mansion, which is the mansion the Lund family lived in, which was in, at that point, when they built the mansion, it was in the most, it was kind of what you consider the most affluent neighborhood in the St. Louis area.
That's right. South St. Louis.
Pardon me?
South St. Louis, as they
call it. South St. Louis, right? Yes, sir. And, you know, and so the family's history is really interesting because the first person to die in the family that triggers the events is Frederick, who dies of mysterious causes. They're not exactly sure exactly how he died, which causes the father to commit suicide, William Lemp, Sr. And then William Lemp Jr. takes over the brewery, and obviously the brewery's going through problems and all of that, and Prohibition comes. And William Lemp Jr. actually commits suicide at that point. Then you have the family, the family business goes to Charles Lemp. Charles Lemp ended up committing suicide. And by the way, Charles Lemp's kind of interesting because he shoots himself in the office in the head, but before he shoots himself, he shoots the dog as well, his pet dog, and leaves a note on how to bury his dog, which is kind of interesting. The sister Elsa, who at one time was considered St. Louis's top heiress, she committed suicide as well. So you have this family of all this suicide in this house, in this mansion, which is an incredible history, and brewing history alone, because when you look at the fact of if Prohibition wouldn't have hit, the Lemp Brewery could probably still be producing today. They found a way to brew the beer and to age it in the caves below the brewery system, which are in St. Louis, in South St. Louis. We have a lot of caves underneath, and that's where they would age the beer. So it's very interesting. If Prohibition probably hadn't occurred, we still might be, the beer still might be around today.
You know, it's amazing, too, with Anheuser-Busch being one of the biggest breweries in the world, since been bought out by InBev. Did they have a family competitiveness there?
Yeah, they were competitive, and the thing is it's how they handled it. You know, where Anheuser-Busch did everything he could, the Busch family to keep the brewery going at Prohibition time. They were even selling ice, George.
Yeah.
To keep it up and running. You know, where you have the Lemps were the totally opposite, where the employees show up one day at the factory and the doors are just locked. You know, they just lock the doors. And then at one point they decide to sell the brewery. But, yeah, there was definitely a competition there. However, you know, it's how they handled the Prohibition which separated the men. I would say the men from the boys. I mean, you know, the Busch family struggled just a little harder, it seems to me. And put a little bit more effort to keep afloat.
And now the Lemp Mansion, of course, is used every Halloween as a haunted house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the caverns, yeah, exactly. The Abyss is what it's called. Yes, definitely. That area down there is very, very hopping in Halloween time with the haunted house, absolutely. The mansion itself, you can stay in the mansion and stuff. The mansion's very, very haunted. I spend up to 3 days a week there, by the way.
What do people say about the mansion in terms of the hauntings there?
Well, the hauntings are, you see a lot of things, like you'll look in a mirror, and you'll see something in a mirror, or somebody will take a picture of a mirror, and all of a sudden there's somebody else in the mirror with them in a photo. Or when they look in the mirror, they'll see somebody else. Or they'll look, a lot of things with mirrors. You look through a mirror and you'll see somebody laying on a bed or sitting in a chair. A lot of footsteps. Hear a lot of footsteps coming around. I was in there just a couple of weeks ago, and I was sitting up where William Lemp Jr. had committed suicide, by the way. And I heard somebody walking up behind me. Well, I thought it was one of the people I work with the St. Louis Paranormal Research Society. And I turned around, and I was the only one in the room. I mean, and the footsteps, they came right up behind me. I mean, it was even the floor shook a little bit with them. And that sort of thing. There's a lot of shadow figures that you'll see, rushing back and forth. And then, of course, you know, there's the EVP. Now, the LEMP has really gotten really kind of well-known for its EVP and spirit box sessions because they seem to want to talk and they want to communicate. I've actually been in the mansion in a tour come through and have different people talking to the tour. What's interesting is if we get into Zeke a little later, you know, that story.
He's the little boy, right?
He's the little boy. Now, there's a couple different things. Some people believe that Zeke was the boy he was deformed. He was actually one of the lumps, and they kept him up in the attic. However, you know, when you start doing research and you start talking to people, Zeke doesn't really show up until after the LEMP era, until after when the house actually became a hospital for a time being. It actually housed a lot of terminally ill patients. You know, and Zeke seems to show up at that time, because when you start talking to people in the neighborhood, you know, and St. Louis, South St. Louis is one of these places where people live their lives there, you know, they've been there forever. And so you start talking to them, and it's in about around the 1956 where we really start seeing Zeke show up. It's believed that he actually was a patient. Not one of the children of the LEMPs. He was a patient that actually fell down the back staircase, which at the LEMP mansion, the Poynter family does have the death certificate that shows that. So, but Zeke is interesting because when you hear, about 10 years ago, they started getting EVP with Zeke, and you would hear the voice, and it was really low and raspy, and he would go, "I'm Zeke," you know, that sort of thing. Same voice comes through the spirit box today. And he's always anxious to talk, and he'll talk to crowds as well. It's quite interesting that he still wants to communicate. Now, they called him the Monkey Boy at one point, which a lot of people don't understand, is that Elsa Lamp, her bedroom was up in that attic area, and that there was two chimpanzees that were kept up there for a period of time. So, you know, the people that say they saw the monkey face looking out probably actually saw real monkeys.
Saw real monkeys, yeah, exactly. Well, how would you categorize the hauntings at the mansion? High, low, medium?
I would say they're subtle, but it's a high level of haunting. Because it's very rare when you'll go in there and not something will happen, you know. It's very rare that something's not going on. But it's subtle in the fact of, you know, it's not going to push you down a flight of stairs or do something like that or grab you or something. But as far as its consistency, it's very consistent in how it behaves. As a matter of fact, on Halloween, the William LEMP suite, they had a band and the ceiling fell in the suite from the vibration, which, by the way, they found a fresco underneath it, which is very quite cool. But anytime the mansion goes under any kind of work, they get very agitated and the activity rises quite a bit. So we've just gone through a period where there's been a tremendous amount of activity because of the work that had to be done. They find it very disturbing for some reason.
Wasn't there a St. Louisan who was a suspect in the Jack the Ripper murders?
Tumblety, Colonel Tumblety, yes, sir. That's in that same neighborhood. You know, he lived in a house there in the same neighborhood, and the story goes he had a party, okay, for all of his military friends, or the men he was over. But the guys got there, and they noticed there was something interesting about it. There was no women there. And they started questioning him about it. And as he started questioning, this is a great story, as they start questioning him about it, he starts to pull jars out of cabinets, and he pulls hundreds of jars, and each of the jars, in the jars, has female genitalia in the jar. And he starts talking about the evil women and how evil they were, and this was the horrible thing of the, you know, the plague on society and all of this sort of stuff. Well, what was interesting was he went to London, and he was actually number two suspect on the Jack the Ripper case. Scotland Yard wanted to talk to him. And so Tumblety gets in a boat, and he starts heading across to America, you know, across the water. And Scotland Yard gets in a boat, and they're going to catch up to him. However, they have a problem with their boat, and they're trying to get to America before him so they can grab him. And, however, their boat has a problem, so they stall, and Tumblety just goes right on by on his boat and goes to America and gets lost for a little bit there.
Was he a doctor?
How do you best describe it? A snake oil salesman. He claimed to be a doctor. He wasn't actually a doctor. He was one of these people. I think he had different. There was a liniment that I know that he sold, and he sold different types of things to cure the ailments. But you know how that goes. He wasn't actually a doctor in that means. But he did have some knowledge of surgery in that sort of thing as well, because of obviously from some of the work that they think that he might have done. And what's interesting too, in that neighborhood, George as well, could have been his first victim, by the way.
Well, you know, they say that they have some DNA now, and they think Jack the Ripper may have been a Polish bartender in England, in London.
Yeah, I saw that.
But when you look at Tumblety's record, you're right. He hated women. I mean, he fit the T of a serial killer profile.
Mm-hmm. And then you have the testimony of people, especially the men that were at that party that night, where he actually gave his 3-hour lecture pulling out these different things on the evils of women there. I mean, come on. Quite a chilling guy, if you ask me.
Yeah, absolutely. So back to the mansion for a moment then, with these various hauntings that have been out there. How many people do you think go through there every year?
I think we probably see, I would say, you know, at least 50,000 a year. When you consider all the people that come for the tours and the events, and then all the people that stay, at least. I never really got into an actual count on that, though. But I would say it would be somewhere around in that area.
Isn't it amazing how many haunted areas St. Louis has? And we've just touched, you know, the tip of the iceberg here.
Yeah, you know, and that's the thing that I think is interesting, because, you know, I looked at some of the things that, you know, I do what you do. I go out and I read, and I see that, you know, there's all these listings of the most haunted cities in America. Now, the Lamp will make a lot of the list of the most haunted places, but you never see St. Louis on that list, and I have to wonder why. Because, you know, when you start taking all of our stories and all of the different hauntings that we have here, we really are one of the most haunted cities in America. And, you know, in some of the different hauntings that you look at, I mean, are pretty significant in what we consider our paranormal history.
What do we know about the area around the Lemp Mansion? Because the whole place is strange, isn't it?
Oh my gosh! You know, there is so much there. We got Tumblety. We have, you know, you have the what they call the Cherokee Park, which you know, one time, you know, you had Civil War soldiers that were encampment. It was an encampment there. You actually had a battle back in the Revolutionary War that happened in that park area. Then you have a convent. This is kind of across the street from the Lemp, where that actually caught on fire, that people still hear the nuns screaming at times, even though the building is no longer there. It burned to the ground, but people still in that alley will hear that nun screaming. You have the Hoppe Mansion, which has, you know, you have it's a room that was uncovered. Well, first of all, the basement of the place is a speakeasy. Then you have in the middle of the room a floor. There's another door. If you haven't seen this, George, I got to show it to you sometime. There's a door that opens up that goes into a sub-basement that they used as a gambler's den for a while that was probably used during the Civil War during the Underground Railroad section.
Right.
But very, very haunted down there. I mean, I've actually attended seances in that room. And every time that I've been down there, that has been quite an experience.
I had knowledge of some people who spent the night at the Lent Mansion, and they were having dinner there. And, you know, it's like a little tiny restaurant area inside there. And he was making fun of the people who committed suicide there, Stephen.
Mm.
And he had his hands under the table. And as God is my judge, he pulls his hands out from under the table, and they're both buttered. Somebody, something had buttered his hands. I mean, he couldn't believe it. He's looking at his hands. I mean, it wasn't under the table. It wasn't stuck underneath there or anything like that. He pulls his hands out from under the table, and there's butter all over. And he was convinced that it was his making fun of those dead spirits, those people who had killed themselves, that they did that to him.
You know what's interesting, too, George, is, you know, there was they know of 200 deaths that occurred in that mansion.
200?
200. See, you know, you hear the Lev story, the Lev family story, because that's a great story to hear. But, you know, the history of the mansion goes further. I mean, there, you know, they had, it was a hospital for the poor, and that was the terminal area where they would take the terminal patients was in the mansion.
And that's where they died. They died in droves.
You've had hundreds of people die there. After that, you know, up until the Pointers bought the place, we all know, it was sort of it was a rooming house for families. I think, you know, when the Pointers bought it in 1974. There were 20 families living under that roof. Which I can't imagine what that was like. They had to have been one right on top of each other. I mean, so, you know, there's a lot of history there that, you know, takes the Lempsters one thing, but then you have this other history that's there in the characters and the people that died there that, you know, the stories come out of through the years. And so the research on that mansion is quite interesting and is not quite done yet. I think we're going to find out more as we go.
Just amazing work. I can understand now what drives you, Stephen, because, I mean, it's fascinating, exciting, and you like that little bit of fear factor there, don't you?
Well, everybody does. I think, you know, there's that little bit of the adrenaline rush, but, yeah, to an extent, but, you know, it takes a lot to scare me anymore, though. You know, I've been thrown against walls. I've had lamps thrown in my head. I mean, you really have to do something to me. But, you know, but there's that, the thing of the history and when you get into the stories. You know what I mean? It's you know, that's where the haunting becomes real and it becomes alive when you know and you have a good idea of what is causing the hauntings and why these are happening. And I think a lot of times, you know, in paranormal research today, we forget the importance of the history and the story.
The history is so critical. We're going to come back in a moment, Stephen, and talk about the St. Louis exorcist case on Coast to Coast AM.